Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I have to admit, when I first started reading through the stack of reports you sent over for today, I legitimately thought there was a typo.
Oh, laughing slightly. I think I know exactly which number you're talking about.
I mean, it just stops you in your tracks, doesn't it?
It really does.
So we're looking at the state of the global art market. This is early 2026. And on the surface, everything looks, well, it looks great.
Yeah.
You've got this massive headline valuation, $67.8 billion.
Right, champagne, record-breaking auctions, all of that.
Exactly. Shiny galleries in Mayfair and Chelsea.
Yeah.
But then you look one line down at the inventory statistics.
The great disconnect.
The great disconnect. The report states that 90%, 90, of all created artwork currently sitting in studios has a financial value of zero.
Yeah.
Not undervalued, just nothing.
It effectively doesn't exist in the market size.
That is just a staggering inefficiency. And the solution proposed in these documents is, frankly, even weirder. We aren't looking at a plan from Christie's or Sotheby's.
No, it's not the usual suspects.
We are looking at a stack of technical papers from an industrial infrastructure conglomerate called Diriticular.
Right.
Power grids, hemp farming in Uganda, and, you know, decentralized social protocols. It feels like we just threw three different deep dives into a blender.
It does sound like a fever dream. I mean, I'll grant you that. But that's why this is such a fascinating case study. If you want to understand where culture is going next, you can't just look at the art world.
You have to look at the infrastructure.
You have to. Today is really about a collision between, you know, high-end aesthetics and industrial-grade engineering.
So the mission today is to connect these dots. We need to figure out how we get from this broken system, which the reports hilariously call the Dallery model.
The Dallery model, yeah.
To something called sovereign nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the key to unlocking billions of dollars in art is a technology designed for rural power grids.
That is the argument. And it's a compelling one. We are seeing the potential collapse of the traditional gallery model and its replacement by AI verification and this decentralized infrastructure.
Okay, before we get to the sci-fi solution, let's diagnose the patient. Let's unpack this Dallery concept. I assumed it was a typo for gallery at first, but it's intentional.
It is. It's a bit of a derogatory term they use in the art industry report to describe the traditional dealer gallery system. And the report paints a picture of a system that is, well, functionally obsolete.
It calls it a high-friction intermediary.
Which is just polite corporate speak for expensive and slow. I mean, look at the status quo. You have the top 0.1% of artists, the blue chips.
Right.
They're represented by mega galleries like Gagosian or Hauser and Wirth. They're doing fine. They're flying private. But the mid-tier, the emerging artists.
They're getting crushed.
Because the math is brutal. If you are lucky enough to get representation, the industry standard commission is 50%.
I've always found that wild. 50%.
Yeah.
You paint the thing, you buy the canvas, you do all the work, and the gallery takes half just for hanging it on a wall.
That's the commission drag.
Yeah.
If you sell a painting for $10,000, you walk away with five. And out of that five, you have to pay for your studio, your materials, your rent.
Your life.
Your life. But the report argues that the fee isn't even the biggest problem. The biggest problem is physics.
Physics, you mean literal space.
Geography is destiny in the Dallery model. A physical gallery in New York City has four walls. Maybe they have, what, 2,000 square feet of exhibition space?
Okay.
Realistically, how many artists can they represent at one time?
A dozen. Maybe 20 if they rotate them fast.
Exactly. There is a hard physical cap on how much art can be validated by the system. There just aren't enough walls in Chelsea for all the talented artists in the world.
So what happens to everyone else? What happens to the thousands of artists who are making incredible work but can't get one of those 20 slots?
They end up in the file drawer.
Which brings us to this concept of invisible inventory.
Right. In science, we talk about dark data research that is done but never published, so it doesn't add to our collective knowledge. In art, we have invisible inventory.
The 90%.
It's the 90% of work that sits in a studio, unvalidated, unpriced, and essentially invisible to the market.
And this leads to that valuation trap the report mentions. This part really struck me as the core of the problem. It says that in the old model, art has no value until a gallery blesses it.
That is the crux of the liquidity crisis. Value is currently based on access, not quality. If a gallery director hasn't put a price tag on it, the market treats it as worthless.
So even if I, as a collector, buy a piece from an emerging artist for $5,000, I'm taking a huge risk.
A massive risk. because you can't resell it.
To whom?
Exactly, to whom? There's no secondary market data. There is no blue book for an artist who isn't famous. You can't just look up the fair market value on an app. So effectively, the asset goes to zero the minute you buy it.
So we have a liquidity trap, a validation bottleneck, and billions of dollars of creative output gathering dust in storage units. It's a bleak picture.
It is. And that's why the solution had to come from outside the art world.
Enter Duraticular. Now, these guys are industrial engineers. They build power grids. Why on earth are they looking at oil paintings?
Duraticular is a venture studio focused on what they call sovereign infrastructure. And their whole philosophy is summarized in this phrase that keeps popping up in their white papers. The line is dead.
The line is dead. It sounds like a punk rock album, but I assume they mean transmission lines.
They mean dependencies. They believe that long-distance centralized grids are fragile, whether it's a power line bringing in electricity from a dam 500 miles away,
or supply chain for food,
or a gallery system deciding value from a specific neighborhood in New York. They view all of that as the line, and they want to replace it with nodes.
Sovereign nodes.
Right. Independent, self-sufficient units. A node handles its own resources. It generates its own power, processes its own data, and holds its own capital.
And to run these nodes, they built this operating system called RIOS.
R-I-O-S, the Rural Infrastructure Operating System. It's basically the brain of the node. It manages electrons, data, and financial credits all at the same time.
Okay, I get the decentralized tech angle, but I'm still struggling with the leap from managing electrons to selling art. The report mentions hemp farming.
This is the aha moment. This is where you have to pay attention. To understand the future of art, you have to understand what Duraticular did with hemp farmers in Uganda.
Okay, walk me through the hemp connection.
So in places like Node 4, which was called Project Umoja in Uganda, farmers were harvesting hemp. They sold the seeds and the fiber, but they were left with tons of hemp stalks biomass.
Just waste product.
To a traditional bank, that pile of stocks is garbage. It's invisible. You can't walk into a bank in Kampala and say, hey, I have 10 tons of hemp stocks, give me a loan.
They'd laugh at you.
Right. It's dead capital, to use the economic term. But Duraticular looks at that pile and sees energy. So they deployed hemp-grade AI. It's an application running on RIOS.
How does it work?
It uses computer vision, so literally scanning the pile with a camera. It analyzes the biomass volume, the quality, and then it verifies that the farmer actually puts it into a gasifier to generate electricity.
So it watches the trash become energy.
And the moment it verifies that destruction and conversion, the system automatically mints a financial credit, a bioenergy credit. It turns the physical trash into a verifiable liquid financial asset on the blockchain instantly.
So they turned invisible waste into money by scanning it and verifying it, without a central bank needing to sign a piece of paper.
That's the mechanism, and that is exactly what they are proposing for the art world.
I see it now. The artists are the farmers.
And the paintings in the studio.
Are the hemp stocks. It's cultural biomass.
Exactly. It's sitting there, treated as waste, because no one has verified it. Duraticular realized that the same tech stack, RIOS, computer vision, blockchain verification, could be used to grade culture just as easily as it grades agriculture.
And that brings us to Project Culture Grade. This is the art world adaptation of the hemp grade tech.
Yeah.
But I assume the process is a little different. We aren't burning the paintings to create energy, I hope.
No, the destruction phase is replaced by preservation. But the verification rigor is even higher. It starts with what they call the physical scan.
The report mentions multispectral imaging. This isn't just taking a nice photo for Instagram.
Far from it. This is technology usually reserved for high-end museum conservation labs or, you know, forensic science. Multispectral imaging looks at the object across different bands of light infrared, ultraviolet, X-ray.
And what is it looking for?
Material health. It's checking the tension of the canvas. Is the pigment stable or is it starting to crack at a microscopic level? Is there mold in the sublayers? It creates a unique, immutable fingerprint or DNA for the art. It proves, objectively, this object exists and it is in this specific condition.
Okay, so you have a health score for the painting. That solves the is it real question. But here is where I get skeptical. Just because a painting is in good condition doesn't mean it's good art, right?
That is the big question.
I could paint a stick figure with the highest quality archival oil paint, and it would pass the physical scan with flying colors.
Exactly. Can an algorithm judge taste? A gallery director offers subjective taste. They say, this speaks to the moment. Can AI replace that intuition?
Right.
Culture gray doesn't try to replace the taste, but it replaces the validator. They call it the social scan, or the oracle.
The oracle, that sounds ominous.
It's just data analysis. The AI doesn't just look at the paint. It looks at the social signal on decentralized protocols.
We're talking about things like Lens and Farcaster here.
Exactly. The AI crawls these decentralized social graphs, and it looks for attestations.
Is that just a fancy word for likes?
No, and that distinction is crucial. Likes are cheap. They can be bought. Attestations are verifiable actions. Who collected this artist's digital work? Do other verified artists follow them? It maps the network of relevance.
Ah, so it's peer review.
It is. Yeah. If you are followed by 10 other artists who have high liquidity scores themselves, your score goes up. It's replacing the opinion of one guy in a scarf in Chelsea with the consensus of a verified community.
And the output of this, the physical scan plus the social scan, is a liquidity score.
0 to 100. And if you score high enough, the system mints a patronage token.
Okay, now we need to be very precise here. Is this just another NFT?
Yeah.
Because I feel like we went through that hype cycle in 2021 and a lot of people got burned buying hyperlinks to JPEGs.
A very fair question. And the report is very specific about this to avoid that confusion. This is not a speculative NFT or a security. It is a bailment.
A bailment. That's a law school term.
It is. It means legal possession. Think of it like a coat check ticket. The ticket isn't the coat, but it proves you own the coat. The token represents legal possession of the physical object.
So it's a real one-world asset, an RWA.
Exactly. And it's compliant with CFTC guidelines. It's boring, legal ownership, just digitized.
So if I buy the token, I own the painting.
Mm-hmm.
But where is the painting?
Yeah.
If I buy a painting from an artist in Lagos via this protocol, I don't necessarily want it shipped to my apartment immediately. I might not have the wall space.
And the artist might not want to ship it until they have to. This is where the infrastructure piece comes back in. Remember those sovereign nodes?
Wall nodes.
Yes. The plan involves converting real estate in places like Mexico City, Lagos, or Berlin into sovereign art nodes.
And these run in island mode, right?
Right. Just like the nodes in the tundra or the desert. Rios manages the climate, HVAC, humidity, temperature, and the security using biometric entry. And it does it all off-grid, often using waste-to-energy power. It's essentially a high-tech, decentralized freeport.
So you have these fortresses guarding the art. But my favorite detail in the implementation plan wasn't the fortress. It was the van.
The Culture Rover.
The Culture Rover. It's such a vivid image. Describe what this is for our listeners.
It solves the logistics problem. I mean, you can't expect every struggling artist to crate up their work and ship it to a central node just to see if it's worth anything. So the node comes to you.
It's a sprinter van.
A ruggedized sprinter van, basically a mobile laboratory. It drives to the artist's studio. It has a portable Rios scanner in the back.
So the van pulls up to the driveway. The artist brings out their invisible inventory.
They scan it right there. The multispectral imaging happens on site. It pings the oracle for the social score. It mints the token. And then, and this is the key, the art goes back into the artist's file drawer.
But now that file drawer isn't a coffin. It's a bank vault.
Exactly. The art is now live on the network. It has a price. It has liquidity. Even though it's sitting in a basement in Brooklyn or a garage in Ohio, it can be traded globally because it has been verified.
It decouples the location of the art from the value of the art. That is huge. But we have to talk about the market. We have the supply, this ocean of inventory. But who is buying it and how?
Right. Because if you bypass the gallery, you need a new marketplace. This is where DESOC Decentralized Social comes in.
The report breaks this down into two layers, Lens and Farcaster. Can you explain the difference for us? Why do we need both?
Think of Lens protocol as the back end or the owner-centric layer. In Web 2, like on Instagram or TikTok, you don't own your followers. If the platform bans you, you vanish. You're a digital serf.
True sovereignty means owning your graph.
Right. On Lens, you take your followers with you, and it has these collect modules. Your post isn't just content, it's a saleable asset.
And Farcaster.
Farcaster is the front end, or the high fidelity layer. The report highlights a feature called frames.
I've seen these. They look like little apps inside a social feed.
Exactly. So imagine scrolling through your feed, you see a piece of art. In the old world, you'd have to click a link, go to a website, create an account, enter a credit card.
Too much friction. I've already kept scrolling.
Exactly. But with the frame, the culture grade scan is right there. You can tap to view the spectral analysis, see the liquidity score, and buy the patronage token without ever leaving the app.
It makes buying a painting as easy as liking a tweet.
That's the idea. High velocity trading for culture. But you're right. Art is expensive. Not everyone has $5 or $10 grand to drop in a Farcaster frame.
So who's buying?
That's where network patronage comes in. The collector DAOs.
The crowdsourced museum.
Yes. Instead of one wealthy collector buying a piece, you have 1,000 people pooling $100 each into a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization.
We've seen this with groups like Plez DAO.
Exactly. They act as a collective intelligence. They vote on what to buy. They validate the invisible inventory that traditional museums ignore. They become the new patrons.
And the economics of this are wildly different for the artist. I mean, this is the part that I think is most revolutionary.
It's the difference between extraction and retention. The report calls it island mode economics.
Break down the numbers for me.
In the Dallery model, 50% of the money leaves the community immediately. If an artist in Mexico City sells a painting through a New York gallery, half that money stays in New York to pay the gallery's rent.
It's capital flight.
Total capital flight. But in the sovereign model, the protocol fee is maybe 5%.
Wow.
So 95% of the value stays in the local ecosystem. If the artist is in Lagos, the money stays in Lagos. It funds materials, it funds studios, it feeds other artists, it builds local wealth instead of exporting it.
It's incredible to think about. We're moving from a system where you have to move to New York or London to make it, to a system where you can make it anywhere as long as you can be verified.
It decouples geography from opportunity.
So let's look at the roadmap. The report has a forecast for 2028. What does the world look like in 2 years if this actually works?
The strategic goal is to replace the gallery certificate of authenticity. You know, that little piece of paper the gallery gives you?
The one I stick in a drawer and immediately look.
That one. By 2028, the goal is for culture-grade verification to be the industry standard for insurance and provenance. If you want to insure your art, the insurance company won't ask for a gallery appraisal. They will ask, what's its culture grade score?
Because that data is objective and real time.
Exactly. It becomes the intel inside of the art market.
And it moves the industry from a scarcity model
to an abundance model.
Right. Because galleries rely on scarcity. They limit supply to keep prices up. They act like gatekeepers.
But the internet and these sovereign nodes thrive on abundance. If everything is verified, graded, and tradable, we don't need to pretend there are only 20 good artists in the world. We can handle a world with 20,000 successful artists.
Which brings up a really provocative thought to end on. If we actually do this, if we unlock all this invisible inventory and flood the market with validated work, what happens to the definition of good art?
That is the ultimate question. For the last century, good art was whatever a curator in Chelsea or a director at the Tate said was good. It was a top-down dictation of taste.
And
now we are handing that power to an algorithm and a community. When an AI analyzes the materials and a DAO decides the value, does the definition of masterpiece change? Does it become more democratic or just more data-driven?
It's the difference between a critic telling you what to watch and the YouTube algorithm serving you exactly what you want.
And we know how much that changed media. Just imagine what it does to fine art. Will artists start painting to please the algorithm? Will they choose pigments that score higher on the spectral scan?
Search engine optimization for oil paintings.
It's a possibility. We might trade the snobbery of the gallery for the efficiency of the machine.
A scary and exciting thought. From hemp farming in Uganda to the algorithmic future of aesthetics. It's been a wild deep dive.
Always a pleasure to connect the dots.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next deep dive. Stay curious.